WSJU Radio, St. John's University, Sports and Hip Hop with DJ Mad Max, live with the one and only Cantrell. Cantrell's doing a lot for the culture out here. He's not sticking with the critics, as everyone wants to hear the mumble rap. We got to hear the educational, real hip hop rap. That's good. Go against the grain.
Always.
That's 100%. So tell me about the new project, Beware the Sheep Clothing, just dropped in February.
Yeah, man. It's like my time. It's like my capsule for 2020, in a sense, you know. Fortunately enough, through creation and then putting it out, it became more. You know what I mean? Even in a creating process, and then that just came. It just manifested through the music after we put it out. But initially, I wanted to cover, pandemic, quarantine, revolution. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Continued uprising and everything in between. You know, and thank God it stretched a little further than that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I actually wanted to hear about your journey through life, because I heard that you dropped out of college to pursue your dreams, which is the right thing to do because you knew what you want to do. Because half the times when we go to college, I think it's just, it's forced. We feel as though we have to go to follow our dreams, and you know what you wanted to do. So where did you attend college, actually?
Went to Georgia Southern University.
You went to Georgia Southern University. Did you make any connections within the university to get yourself in the music industry, or was all just you just meeting people on yourself at events?
Yeah. I mean, we had a little scene. We had a real rich music scene, actually. None of that really was any of my connections to the industry as far as trajectory and where it went. But I did meet a lot of good people, a lot of great artists, a lot of great, you know, beings in general. There, so I mean, and I think it's always been that way. Georgia Southern has always had a rich culture in music, not even just hip hop, but rock. A lot of good indie rock bands on campus and in the city. Didn't go to the school, you know, Savannah is right down the street, you know what I mean? Very rich culturally, very rich musically, also. So, I think it was perfect, man. It was just essential for me, even if I didn't meet anybody that would, I guess, be directly instrumental in my career, but. It was where I needed to be at the time.
Something that was important in hearing about your story was that you were a big performer on the campus. Were you the number one guy?
I don't know, man. I wouldn't say, I was the number one guy.
Of course, of course. I mean, Nas only recognized you in your time with Matt Sapil. We'll get into all that later. So that was big for you. What was the most important thing that you learned at your time in college that you helped in craft your career independently here?
It's funny because this is like one of the things that I feel is like they make you take and as far as just freshmen coming on campus or whatever, but I probably time management.
Time management.
I was never good at time management before because I just had raw talent and whatever I wanted to try. Or I could acquire the skill if I tried long enough. That was just always me. If it didn't come easy at first, I found a way to make it come easy. So I don't really have good time management skills, you know, but I feel like not college per se, but the ups and downs that came with college and just in my personal life at the same time, trying to balance both, trying to do music, this, and the third, it really taught me how to, it just taught me focus in a different way. Mm-hmm. You know, my mom real good with teaching me how to focus and block out the noise, but I learned it in a totally different way because life hits you too. You know what I'm saying? Like people don't know these college kids, a lot of them got some real stuff going on.
Yeah.
On top of balancing school and whatever else they're doing extracurricular wise. So I think time management and just another level of focus was one of the most richest things I got out of my time in college.
And that's important. Something I think that you would serve an inspiration to the people listening right now, the people that are going to be graduating this May, because when you dropped out of college, it's all about where am I going to go next? So what was the first step that you took into getting into what career that you wanted to do, which was rapping?
Hitting as many open mics as I could. At the time, open mics was a big thing. I think country, you know, at that time, open mics was huge. Whether you're in Brooklyn, you're in Atlanta, Georgia, whether you're in my city, Albany, like, I don't think it mattered. But I think around that time, open mic scene was huge. So just my visibility, whether it was in person, going to music festivals, trying to perform at music festivals, or just my online presence, whatever it was, I was trying to make sure I was visible and that my product sounded good, looked good. You know what I mean? Those are like my first main steps, because where I'm from, we don't really have any resources. I say this all the time, we wouldn't know what a resource looks like if it slapped us in the face. You feel me? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, that's where we from, you know? And I think that's akin to any small town, whether you're in a huge state or a small state, or in the middle of nowhere, or the middle of America, I should say. No matter where it is, I think small towns got that same, you know, steep hill to climb.
Mm-hmm.
So the main thing I focused on first, you know, it wasn't even a connection thing. But I was hoping that it would lead to more connections. And of course, eventually it did.
And that's great that it did. Being from Albany, how do you like Atlanta?
Man, it's a, can I be 100% honest?
Yeah, you can.
It's a love-hate relationship. Like, I love it, but at the same time, I'm just so used to the pace, man. That country pace is what I'm used to, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's the, like, I think my biggest gripe was with Atlanta traffic. Mm. And the people, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's traffic, man. Like,
things. The Atlanta traffic is worse than the New York traffic.
I say because I feel like I expect it in New York. You know, and in Atlanta, you can go from a clear road, you merge like 285, or you're trying to get on I-20 at the wrong time of day, and you go from peace and bliss to chaos. You know, so it's just. That's spectrum, man. It's just difficult to deal with. So I kind of expect it in New York. And even at LA, I think like there's some times where you just don't want to be stuck in traffic in LA. And even people out there say Atlanta traffic is worse. So
what I find ridiculous with New York rappers from the city is that how they view the rappers that come from the countryside in New York.
Yeah.
Because I think the best rappers right now in New York are from Buffalo. Conway and Benny and all them, they're putting the rappers in the boroughs asleep right now. I just don't understand why it's that when you're from Albany or Buffalo, you can't just merge and just accept New York for it's New York as a whole. It's a state.
That's big. That's I hear that conversation. Like, we have a lot of friends in New York, just spread around different boroughs or what have you, but we hear that all the time too. Like, even in people that we don't know, you know, I think I've heard French Montana in an interview say something about it before, you know, he's very vocal about areas and geographical locations and how they deal with people. Even if, you know, he's talking down on another one, you know, prove a point, you know, it's, that's something I hear all the time. And I think that's real. First off, shout out to the Braves hat. favorite baseball team. But, yeah, I believe that's one thing I love about Georgia, man. Like, once you start bubbling, they don't really care. You from Georgia, you know what I'm saying? You from Georgia, like, however you want to, you feel me? So I love and I appreciate about Georgia. And I feel like it's a good model for other places to follow, like New York, you know? Mm-hmm. I think Cali, yeah, too. Like, they have a lot of pride. And they're separate, like the Bay is the Bay, you know. I don't want to speak on other places outside of that, but you know, you see what I'm saying? Like, they you know, they're separating. They're so huge together. They seem pretty strong too. Like, if you're from California, you're from California, you know, and they rock with you. So I don't know, hopefully they get with it, but I know y'all spirit though. So even if they don't get with it, I know it's people that's going, they coming regardless, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I call out what's real out there, and you're one of the realest artists right now in the game because you stick to your craft. Coming from New York, because it's tough now. I read an interesting comment on a hip hop video. I wonder which one it was from the weekend. Just saying that it was actually someone that was from Atlanta, and they're saying that they're looking forward to driving to New York so they could turn on the New York hip hop stations to hear that New York sound hip hop. You don't hear that anymore. It's almost now the Atlanta sound has been taken over by New York artists because you should sound how you. You should sound where you come from.
Yeah,
that's not the case anymore.
That's true. I think that's a good point. You should sound like where you come from. And I think it's necessary too.
Yeah.
I know fired by different areas and you want to play with different things, but man, it's a part of who you are. And I think it's essential for people to hear that and feel that. Like it's different, bro. Like music in Albany, Georgia sounds different than music in Atlanta, Georgia and making Georgia. But there's something that's similar about it because it's Georgia, but it's like, I just think it's you can almost smell it, you know, like when you're listening to some of the music, it just strikes different chords with you. So, but Atlanta has been running the industry for a while. So I guess you can't, some people can't help but try to catch up. I feel like the industry, in a sense, no matter what industry you're in, is always chasing, you know, so it's always behind chasing, you know, and I think they just, some people just have no choice, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's, oh man, Atlanta popping with this song right now, we gonna try that. We gonna try that because that's what works. And I feel like when you got a machine, that helps, but it's real essential to just to be you. You know, I think that's a message, like what you're saying about the music sounding like where you're from. I think that's real testament to anybody that's, even if they're not doing music, you know, students may be listening, it might be somebody driving home from work right now, whatever it might be, you know, just being you is the best thing, man. And whatever that look like or sound like forget everything else, forget everybody else.
And I know that in your music, you speak about the Nation of Islam, and you talk about educational things in your music, whereas I feel as though that the mainstream has crept into hip hop nowadays. It's not hip hop, it's hip hop now. Mm. And I feel as though white people are very accepting of this new rap that you hear right now because it's not educational. Like when Public Enemy and NWA was out, white people wanted no part of that. Get that away from here. Yeah. So now you got, let's say, like someone like Jack Harlow. So they accept that. Mm-hmm. He's mumbling. He's doing his thing. Do you feel as though that white people have entered the industry and then the mainstream has taken over to the point where that educational rap is just being shut out right now?
No. But I will say something. I feel like a point you're hitting is real important is that it's the mirror. You know, that's the difficult thing to, you know, it's hard for any human to look themselves in the mirror and really look at themselves in the mirror, you know, don't like the blemishes, you know, so I feel like that's what the type of music you're talking about does in America in general or the world, look at themselves in the mirror. Anytime you listen to a song that's got any kind of substance to it, it's going to be a mirror, you know what I'm saying? Even if it's not unapologetic, it's going to be a mirror. And that's the thing I think a lot of people are afraid of. I don't think it's necessarily being shut out. I do think it's being suppressed a little bit. Because the blog era, man, is, I think that's a testament to, I'm using that word all night, right? Testament. But I really, it really shows that there is some suppression that goes on a little bit, you know, like muffling some of the, you know, some of the more organic and substance heavy things. And it may not be a conspiracy, I don't know, but I do think it's real. You know, when Nipsey and Mac Miller and Freddie Gibbs and all these people and these great, amazing talents, resting, you know, much power to Nipsey and his family, but it's clear, you know, like it was the most pop, that was the cool thing. You know what I'm saying? Era was, that was cool, you know, and then another radio resurgence happened. Sound wise, I should say. I do think there's a little suppression going on. I don't know if it's just by design or by algorithm or whatever it may be, but I do think it's there. And I just think it's the mirror that's hard for people to look in, man. And as you said, specifically white people, I think it's just hard to look in the mirror.
You know, they don't want to admit that they're wrong. I mean, I grew up in a black community, so you know, I understand the struggles that you guys go through and you got to call it out. I mean, police are racist and you got to be able to support that. You know what I mean? Yeah. You got to support what you guys are calling out. It's ridiculous. You couldn't have an album like Fear of a Black Planet nowadays. You know, the outrage that would cause in the media.
And I do think it's also important, man, to note that is nobody's begging for assistance. You know, when we ask people, you know, we are white people in general, we ask, or particularly, when we're like, yo, like, what you doing? Like, you and, you know, you eating off this culture, but you ain't saying nothing. You know, it's not a beg for a cry for help. It's more like a count. You know what I mean? So I don't want anybody to think that. And if you are begging for help, I want you to realize it. And like, you don't need nobody help. You don't need anybody assistance. It's just, you know, be accountable and be knowledgeable and realize that the things you say and the people that's watching you, they do hold power and they do hold weight. So if you gonna rep with us the right way in this culture, black and brown people, you know, cool. Yeah. you know, people need to point it out more, you know what I'm saying? Like, because it's whack. It's whack at the end of the day.
Yeah, I agree, man. I mean, I think it's ridiculous out here. I don't know when things are going to change. I mean, now you have these Asian crimes going up now with COVID-19, and it's here we go with that now.
Man, it's so sad, man. There was a situation, there's a tragedy down here in Atlanta recently.
Yeah.
Guy went to some massage parlors, went on a little spree.
Yep.
And hightailed it. And what's crazy, he hightailed it. He got caught back in the 229 in the area where I'm from. That's where he got, he was fleeing south. I don't even know if he knew where he was going. It's just people in general, man. I think it's interesting. I like what you said. You said you don't know when it'll change. I don't either. I had that conversation with a lot of people too. Like when you look back and you look at history, it's like, is it supposed to change?
Yeah.
You know, if it's been going on for thousands and thousands of years in different ways, it just looks different. It sounds different. Like, is it supposed to change?
Yeah.
You know, and are we just supposed to make sure we're doing our part to help continue to make sure that it changes, if one day it may?
Yeah.
Like, it's just, I don't know, I just look back and I wonder, but at the same time, I don't get too bogged down in it, because at the end of the day, whether it will change or not, we have a duty, and that's to be.
Yeah. It bothers me anytime something like that comes up in the news, because, I mean, do these people have lives? More in particular, these white males, because that's what it really is. The white males, do you have lives? Why are we still in 2021 worrying about what someone else's skin color is and what they look like and what their religion is? Who cares? Worry about yourself. What do you, like, I just don't get it. What do you care?
Facts. It's taught. I think that's the hard part about it. You know, it's like we ask that question, and I think the response to that is that it's taught. You know, excuse me. I hope he doesn't mind. He probably won't mind. There's this kid at the rink. Mm-hmm. He had like a MR skating me back home. I was a rink rat, mm-hmm. You know. And I'm a figure in the rink. You know, I'm a leader in the rink. I've been going there for over 20 years. You know, so it's like my. So we had this weird time period where white kids were just using the N-word, just throwing it around.
I remember that in high school, like more in particular, Italian kids.
Oh, and that's crazy for a whole different reason, but we can get into that too. Yeah. I learned, that's one of the things I learned in college. It was about when the Italians migrated here. Mm. And the white people that were already here were treating them the same way they were treating the black people.
Yeah.
That's why it's strange to me.
It is, you know, strange.
Part that's strange to me, and then I know where it's like, picture, you know, say you got a African-American community on this side of the road, Italian community on this side of the road, and then the front side you have, you know, the white people that are already here, they're treating the Italians the same way they're treating the black people, and then they look one day, like, hey man, you know what? Y'all look like us. What are we doing?
Yeah.
And they switch. But I don't even know that, because I love touching on that. But, oh, the kid in the rink. Sorry. One of the kids, he was with us hanging out at IHOP, and he used it trying to tell a story, and the way it came out, it didn't sit well with the people around me. Mm-hmm. I kept my composure. Other people around me kept my composure. One person didn't. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't like when anyone uses it, to his defense. There's a brother of mine in my skate team. Mm-hmm. And they wanted me to talk to the kid, because him and the other guy, they bumped heads a couple of nights later. You know, they want me to talk to him, and everyone wants me to, one side wants me to get on to him, yeah. You know, just brought on him. And the other side, the white kids want me to soothe him. So I didn't either. I listened to him, and I started poking. I wanted to know where it was coming from. So I asked him certain questions where he wouldn't know and he'll feel comfortable. And what I found out, man, was he's probably like 15, 16, and he had not been in school before. He was home the whole time, and he was like on this swamp, you know, in Southwest Georgia. And what I found out was, man, they're teaching it. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, he had no the damage he was doing, mm-hmm. right? But the people that know down there in that swamp, they probably didn't go to school, never, yep. You know, because the school he goes to didn't exist. You know, it's like a private school. So they weren't going to no public school.
No.
Not with the mentality they had, you know what I'm saying? So they were schooling on the, you know, wherever they at. And He said he had never heard Black people referred to as anything but a certain, like, four derogatory terms. He said he had never heard us being referred to as Black people until he started going to school in the city at, like, 15, 16 years old. So it's, that's one thing I think we have to, you know, realize is that it's being taught, yep. You know, it's teaching it.
Yep.
That's millennials now, or the white kid millennials, that they're so against it. So it shows that it's not just happening. It's taught. Someone's teaching it somewhere. Yeah. You know what I mean? Some of the younger kids, they're like, no, like, F that. Like, but some of the kids a little younger than that, a little older than that, getting that teaching, man, and it's foul. It's poison. It's poison.
And I agree with you that they're teaching it. And a problem with these colleges and even high schools, I mean, when you have Black kids in a classroom, they can't relate to what a white teacher is teaching them. You know, you need to be more diverse. These colleges need to get more diverse.
Representation.
Stop having these white conservative teachers in there. They don't even touch on Black history. They don't touch on that. And the Black History Month thing is just, that should even be a thing, because it should be all year round. We should be celebrating, not just 1 month. And by the way, that is the shortest month. So that's ridiculous in and of itself. And it's racist to that point, the fact that it's the shortest month.
Facts. I think it's one of those things that it's like an attempt to pacify. And I think it's also an attempt to not look in that mirror again.
Yeah. You know, like
giving Black people a month that I'm sure we never asked for.
Yeah.
It not only tries to help pacify the ones that will run with it and celebrate it and not, you know, not look again, but it also helps some people not have to look in the mirror. Mm. And that is there. Well, we gave you this. Well, we gave you that. We gave you that. You know, it's just, don't want to look in the mirror and face cold, hard truths, you know, and poisonous and toxic truths at the end of the day. That's why I feel like that is, because Black history is American history.
Yeah, it is. And I think it has a lot to do with what you say. People don't want to, more precisely, white males don't want to look in the mirror with what they've done in their life and what they're about. Because you see these guys, even with the Asian people that were shot, it's just, they have a lot of hatred inside themselves and they got problems. This is their America. Cause I had a conversation with one of a few artists about the whole Trump situation. And they basically said that we kind of deserve Trump because that's your America. That is their America.
That's funny. That's almost as funny as he is. He's hilarious. Yeah. In such a horrible way. But yeah, man, Black history is American history. Native history is American history. Mexican history is American history. Asian history is American history.
Yep.
I mean, Italian history is American history. At this point, I don't even want to get anything wrong, so I'm just saying Middle Eastern. You know, like Middle Eastern history at this point. Like, everything is American history at this point.
Yeah.
You know? But especially Blacks, Natives, and even Asians, you know what I mean? So we just, that mirror, man, it's
all about the mirror.
Cracked, is dirty, but I feel like it's got like magic powers in it. You know what I'm saying? Like the minute you really look in it, the cracks are gone, you know, the dust is gone.
Yep.
You can see, you know, but nobody wanna look in the mirror.
Yeah. You're exactly right. People are afraid to. And if they decide to, it remains to be seen whether they will change once they recognize who they really are inside when they look in the mirror. I want to get it. Yeah.
It was a mirror.
Yeah. Like,
you know, and it was like, y'all probably deserve it because this is a mirror. Like, he was a mirror. You know what I mean? Or I shouldn't say he was a mirror. Okay. It's a whole different conversation. But I do believe he held up a huge mirror.
Yeah.
You know, and it really showed everyone what this country was really about at the time and what it's always really been about.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's crazy. I want to get into how you got connected with Nas and signing to Mass Appeal, then hearing about your situation in which you departed and you had to do what was best for you at the end of the day. And that's always, no matter what deal it is, you could sign a deal with someone like Nas, but at the end of the day, it's all about what's best for you.
Exactly. So, like I said, I was trying to focus on my visibility,
yep.
right? dropped out, but that's something I kept up. You know, it became part of my system, you know, just making sure the presentation was good and the music was good, right? Yep. So I'm stressing that because I feel like it's so many people that creators that need to, first off, they need a system, you know, and they need to realize that people are watching. So if you don't have the followers, if you have the presentation and the product, somebody will help you, right? Yeah. I say that. I was doing my thing, recording myself, mixing my own music, mastering my own music, everything but producing it, right? Mm-hmm. And Mischief Boy, who's my current producer, he's out in LA. He lives in LA. He's originally from, but he's lived in LA for the longest. And he found my music online on SoundCloud. Yeah. Funny, I'm a SoundCloud rapper.
Yeah, but a good one. Remember that.
So he finds my music on SoundCloud, reaches out to me with like this ruse. It's funny. Every time I think about it, it's so hilarious. He reaches out to me with a ruse. Mm-hmm. He's like, hey, music is dope. I find you on SoundCloud. Do you want to rap to some beats that I have? Mm-hmm. I have a producer. He produces. His name is Nico Blank. He's an amazing producer as well. Okay. You want to rap? You know, he's like, you just want some beats. It's basically mm-hmm. how he kicked it, right? Mm-hmm. A beat pack. I picked like two because I didn't want to overdo it. I recorded to him, sent them back. He was like, man, this is crazy. We should work on a project. So it went from, do you want to just rap on the music? Do you want a project? So I flew to LA, long story short. We worked on a project that would start us to Angels. So I did that before we even signed the deal. Mm-hmm. And came back home. I flew back to Georgia, flew back to Albany. And he's like, man, I think we can get you a situation with this. We really got some good music here. My manager is his manager, Mikey Lev. Mm-hmm. He's friends with Nas's manager, Anthony Soleil. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Anthony Soleil, big love. Passed him the music. At first he didn't. You know, at first when he passed Anthony the music, it didn't strike right away because I was missing a single, right?
Yeah.
And you know, Anthony's up here. Yeah. You know what I mean? That's why he was initially looking for the singles. The talent was there. So, I take it as a compliment. He was looking for the single. He thought the single was just missing. I take it as a compliment to my look, my sound, what have you, right? And he done passing the music at first.
Yeah. And
a couple of weeks go by, maybe a month or two, and the music grows on him as good music with substance should. Mm-hmm. And he's like, this is actually special. You know, I'm gonna pass this to some people. One of the people ended up being Nas and Peter Bittenbender. Nas signs off on it. He's like, I rock with it. Mm-hmm. Bender loved the music. He loved my vision. Just being able to be a forward thinker. And that's how we got there.
Mm-hmm. Well, during your time at Mass Appeal, did you ever have the opportunity to work with Dave East?
No, I didn't. I did not. I probably, man, what's funny is, the 2 years I was there, I saw him once.
Mm-hmm.
I think he had came through the, he was moving around. I don't think that was his home recording studio anymore. Yeah. He had, you know, he's moved around. So he had a different place that he was probably working out of, it seemed. But man, I ran into him once and it was on tour at SOB's.
Mm-hmm.
It was Jungle's birthday, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And Brayden, and he was there. But other than that, no, I ain't really running the dude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's interesting, because I worry sometimes, because I don't think these big record labels and including Eminem with Shady Records, they don't even, there was a dispute there with West Side Gunn with the Griselda guys. They didn't push them enough. There's no, I feel as though there's still not enough push in there from Mass Appeal with Nas, with Dave East. You have good artists, start pushing them because they're very talented and they have a story to tell.
Thanks. I love this conversation, so I'm gonna have a real conversation with you to mm-hmm. that point. Like, man, so I'm a creative in general, right? Mm-hmm. So it stretches beyond music to me or for me. So I was listening to King's Dead, man, incredible Nas album.
Yep.
And I get to the end and I hear the outro and I'm like, yo, mind y'all, I'm not on the label anymore at this point, right? But I'm like, this is good. Now, and I was happy for him for being able to work with someone that can get him some production.
Yeah.
Stronger production, more consistent production. That's what I'm going to say. Yeah. More consistent. And I'm listening to the outro, man, and it's like, I'm like, yo, this is the perfect spot to put his stable on the record. Mm-hmm. Whoever's there, I'm like, man, why they ain't on this record? And it's not even necessarily just from the points you're making, but just thinking like as a, like if I was to EP it, like if I was, you know, in the corner, Hit Boy, of course he's moving the pieces, but if I was just in the corner every day, and that's probably the one time I would speak, you know, and be like, hey, you should throw whoever else is on the label on that record, man. Mm. He was dropping, you know, he's dropping Mass Appeal, you should sign with us. But it's like, at the end of the day, to your point, and it's something we should speak on, so I'm gonna say it, who is Mass Appeal? As far as like the faces and the artists, like in his world, nobody really knew. They don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Not really. Sometimes when you have a strong personality, I won't just say a rapper, but a strong personality that has a label, sometimes they can't see that. They can't see the real truth is that nobody knows, really knows about this. You know, I got some good press on this, on this business venture. I got some good press on this, but nobody really knows what I'm talking about when I say Mass Appeal, you should sign with us, or at least the faces. So I feel like that's something to your point, man. People got to get in the trenches with whatever they're doing, you know, labels included and labels aside, like whatever you're doing, you got to get in the trenches with it. You know what I mean? I can just tell from talking to you, like with everything that revolves around your craft and you being good at what you do, I can tell you've been in the trenches with it, you know? So just the references, like how I've clearly you've done your homework. You know what I'm saying? Like with it. So labels included, labels aside, people got to get in the trenches. And I think that's one thing that's got to happen. I think labels just got to continue to get into the trenches. It's some labels that are doing it, you know, some boutique labels, indie labels that have distribution that they're doing a good job of it. You know, they're doing a good job of getting in the trenches with the artists, for the artists, but not enough.
No.
Not still telling, you know, we're still rightfully advising people to not sign deals, you know, so it's not being done enough at the end of the day.
It's not. It's a shame because at the end of the day, we need new artists like you. We need new artists like you and Griselda and Dave East, you know, everyone deserves a platform. Especially if they're different. I think what you do, what these other artists that I mentioned do is great for hip hop. We need these artists back that actually speak on something that's actually real. The Maseratis and the Bugattis, we could save that for another day. Yeah. Life isn't about that all the time. It's about what people go through in their lives. Hip hop is from the struggle.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like you, I love how you said it's not about that all the time. You know, it's another day for that.
Yeah.
We don't have to knock it. You know what I mean? It's just that's not what's going to get you through every day. You know, highlights, they're good trophies for what trophies do. You know, most trophies sit on the wall and collect dust.
Yeah.
Or they're collecting dust, you know, and it's good to look at them every now and then. And every now and then you look at them, but what's real is what's going on every day. So I appreciate you for that, you know, that recognition for sure.
You already know. You already know. Keep doing what you're doing. Was there any important piece of advice that Nas gave you when you left, or when you left, you didn't have any contact with him?
That's funny. That's funny. If you did what I think you did, that's amazing. And if not, it's amazing because it happened. But the advice I got from Nas was not getting any advice at all.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that was the advice I got. I think I saw him twice, you know. One time was during my release party in New York. Mm-hmm. He chilled in the studio, and he listened to some records that me and some of the other guys like Stro had done. I was like, man, y'all killed this, and the third. It's funny. I found out how he really felt about me and my music at the time through my mama.
Mm-hmm.
Mama was at the party, right?
Mm-hmm.
And apparently in passing after, you know, in the hallway before he dipped out, he stopped her and told her that I was really talented and that I had something special. So I even appreciate it though. You know what I'm saying? It's like, that's a moment. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, gotten advice from him, but that's a moment too. You know, and I don't really hear too many things go that way. So it was a moment for me and for her at the end of the day. You know?
That's big. I mean, he's one of the greatest of all time, top five.
Exactly. So to hear that, period, whether it came from him or through, it's just funny how it came through her, you know what I'm saying? So it's special to me in that sense too. So that's why I say the advice I got in one way is just not getting advice at all, but make that moment, because that still means something. He didn't have to say it.
No, he didn't. And that's big for you, because that means no matter what the issue is with the situation you have with Mass Appeal and what you had to leave to do what was best for you at the end of the day, the fact that he even recognized your talent means you're going to do what you want to do in life. No matter how big it is, you're going to reach that goal.
Exactly. I mean, you can't stop it, man. Nobody can stop it. You know what I'm saying? Who stops Jay? Who stops the guys in Griselda? Like, who stops Top Dog? You know, who stops Johnny Shipes and Cinematic? Like, who, you know what I'm saying? Like, who stops anybody? As long as you got the will, you know what I'm saying? The willpower to move forward, the willpower to seek knowledge. You know what I mean? Like, will, man. Like, who can stop you? You know, I think you know that, you know? Yeah.
You're exactly right, man. Is there anything that you're currently working on now? Anything else? Because I know you just dropped the EP. We know how the music scene is. Now you got to constantly be dropping things. Is there anything that you're working on forthcoming?
I know, right? Music videos. Visuals. But it's the visuals for the project. You know, we're still, because of that same reason that you said, where everything's just got to come out, that's also when we see the opportunity to, you know, we ain't got to be in a hurry. Let's make sure we're right. They hit, you know, on the grand scheme of things. When they come out, you know, who cares that it, you know, we let it breathe for a while. But I think it all great, because it allows more conversations like this to happen and not be too cluttered with so much content. So everything happens for a reason, you know what I mean? So we're still cranking out visuals, making sure that, you know, they're right, everything about them is right and ready to go. That's the main thing we focused on right now, that and some business endeavors announcing real soon. So, music visuals, being a creative on the other side, being a creative director for some people and some things, and an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm. That's big.
Yeah, appreciate that, man. Stepping into that space with a heavier foot now. That's what we focused on right now.
What's interesting, too, is your journey throughout your life. You were always involved in sports. You played golf, tennis. You played football in college.
Find that out, bro. That's crazy.
I do my research.
I don't even know where that's set. I don't even know if I can find that easily, or at least where I said it, but oh, that's crazy. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Golf. How did you like golf? Because I used to play golf when I was younger.
Really?
Yeah.
How did you like it?
I liked it a lot. To be honest, I mean, I had a really great experience with it. I believe when I started out really young playing, it was my number one sport. I had a mentor at my golf course who said I could have been really, really good, but my mentor eventually left and went down to Florida, because I'm from Connecticut originally. And once he left, my career, my mental frame wasn't the same after he left, because when you lose your mentor and he leaves and you lose interest, and it's just not the same. You don't got the same people backing you. I had another mentor trying to change my swing up, and it wasn't happening, and my career that's why I'm here today. I started playing basketball, and my career in radio is now underway. So, but golf is a long life away, and you know, I'll never forget that part of my life.
Wow. That's how I feel about baseball.
Yeah.
Like, golf is my baseball.
What position did you play in baseball?
In high school?
Yeah.
Left field and center field. I had the arm and the speed for center field, but he had another arm come through, so I could move over to left field, because nobody could play that trap of a corner like I could.
Yeah.
So I had an arm for center field, so I could move over to left. But I mainly played left field, and batted either first or ninth, mostly, you know. So I bat ninth, I can be on base for the leadoff hitter, because I ran a 4-4, high 4-3 in the 40. So I only got thrown out twice in my entire because I came back from concussion too soon. So my reaction speed is crazy, you know.
Damn.
But so that's my baseball, man. Just the way I miss it, you know. Like, I mean, I played football in college, Southern, but it's different, man. It's something about that game that I still I still think about it. I still ponder on it. The memories are different. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's no. Just different. Baseball. That's interesting that you played baseball. Football. What position did you play?
In college, we were running the spread at Southern at that point. A coach named Chris Hatcher had just came from Valdosta State, and he was operating the spread. So I played an H-back like a Percy Harvin.
That's fire.
Yeah, I played slot, play in the backfield, and for certain like screens and things like that, I play out wide and play the Z or something like that. But that, and I was being molded to return punts and kicks. But I got there late as far as summer camp, so instead of returning kicks, I was blocking them.
Okay.
Actually behaving and on the team.
Yeah. You played a lot of sports. You had that exposure because I know a lot of times parents will be like, let's see what you're good at. You know, try out all these sports because I tried out everything in life and I liked golf and basketball and you tried everything and you liked baseball the best.
Yep. Yeah. Same, man. It was huge. I don't know what I'd be without sports. Like a lot of things in my life, you know, skating, friends, family, music, but sports in particular, it teaches you something different, you know? And then when we get older and we look at the sports that we played and the things that came with it and different philosophies and we applied to just our everyday life, it's incredible, bro. You know, yeah. So just being able to take the game of baseball and probably apply it to life and certain things about football and apply it to everyday life is incredible. So I don't know why I'd be without sports, you know.
Rapping could be considered a sport too.
Facts.
Yeah.
Really getting back into that bag as far as like treating it like one, you know. Just the daily routine, you know, schedule, sticking to your schedule and just different aspects of the games, you know, when it came to sports and just applying that to looking at being a rapper, like being an athlete, you know, taking care of your body, you know, so your vocal cords got to be right. You know what I mean? When you're doing shows and you're moving around, you ain't got to have like an APAC, but you got to be in internal shape. You know what I mean? Survive the road because it's brutal. So yeah, I'm just getting back into that bag. You know, I do some certain motivational things in the morning to keep me in the headspace.
Good.
So no, I enjoy it. It's fun looking at it like a sport. I used to didn't. I was real artsy fartsy. Well, I did, and I went through this artsy fartsy phase. But being able to put both together and really look at it like a sport is fun.
Yeah, I wish others looked at it as a sport. I think other people just look at it as they see dollar signs and let me get to it.
Yeah, because I think looking at it like a sport and it adds a different factor for you. You know, like people talk about the little babies, his development as an artist. I don't think we see little baby the way he is if he didn't see it as a sport eventually. And he saw it as a sport early. You know what I'm saying? Like he's early mixtapes, he's like, nah, you know, I'm gonna do this for real. Like, this ain't just gonna be a check. I'm gonna get good at this. I'm finna come with these bars. You know what I'm saying? Like, so up in his development and up in his artistry, I think it came from looking at it like a sport. So I think if more people looked at it like a sport, as far as the rappers in the game, it would definitely balance the scales a little bit.
It would. It definitely would. I think it would. Anything else, man? I mean, the floor is yours. Anything else that you have coming up? I know you got visuals coming up, entrepreneur thing coming out. You got a lot of things going. You're working on a lot, which is good.
Yeah, man. I mean, I think that's really it, man. I guess what I would say last is just anybody that may be listening or catch this, I put it in a quote. On a project, you know, you're not what you go through, but everything you go through helps make you who you are. So stay the course. You know, so whatever you're going through, man, you're not that thing. You know, people that battle with depression and anxiety, you're not your depression, you're not your anxiety. But being able to navigate those waters, you know, as they say, calm seas never made a skilled sailor. So when you can, you know, learn how to navigate those waters, man, it makes you something. You know, so stick around to see what it ends up making you. Stay the course. You're not what you're going through. It's bigger than that. You know, as they say, your situation, not your destination.
Yep.
And I guess that's the last thing that's on my heart, you know, for anybody that may need that.
It was an important message. It was definitely important, man. I appreciate you coming on the show. We got your project in the rotation up here at St. John's because of me, because I got to put on for the culture.
DJ Mad Max.
Yeah, you already know, man. I want you to take care. Stay safe. I'm looking forward to the new things that you have coming out in the future. We'll be in tune. And tell them where they can follow you on Instagram, too.
It's I am Cantrell at everything. The letter I, of course. Yep. I am N-T-R-E-L-L on everything. On everything. And I appreciate you. Appreciate you, my brother, for sure, for not just allowing me on your platform, but for good, genuine, nourishing conversation, you know. And of course, especially for allowing me to be on your platform.
You know, of course, man. Anytime, and you're always welcome. I want you to have a great night, and we're going to be listening to your music up here.
Have a good night, too, my brother.
You too, man. Peace.
Yes, sir.